This summer, the world's best tennis players are coming back to Cincinnati. The Cincinnati Open returns August 8th through the 23rd. Bigger than ever, with new fan spaces, incredible food, drinks, and entertainment all in one place. Voted Tournament of the Year by the players themselves. Community Weekend starts August 8th. Finals weekend, August 22nd and 23rd. Get your tickets now at CincinnatiOpen.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, the ESB today said that despite having more than 1,600 public chargers across the country, its network can only support up to 1,400 EVs charging at the same time. Joining us is Brian Caulfield, Associate Professor at the School of Engineering at Trinity College Dublin. Brian, I'm not quite sure what to make of this story. I mean, I suppose the likelihood of everyone charging their car at the same time is about the same as the likelihood of everyone arriving at a petrol station at the same time. But I suppose it does suggest that our EV charging network is not up to scratch.
Exactly. I was going to make that point myself, that if everybody showed up to take petrol, you know, there would be long queues and that system would fall over too. I think the bigger problem here is not that the EV charging network isn't up to task. It's more that, you know, our electricity grid isn't up to task either. We have to electrify everything in order to meet our climate our targets. So that includes heating, it includes transport, as we're talking about, and everything else. So when that strain is on the grid, we've done research recently that shows that when that strain is on the grid, not only the public charging, but domestic charging could have issues as well if everybody charges at the same time. But as we said, that's very unlikely.
Okay, so our EV charging network, how good is it? How ordinary is it? How bad is it?
It depends, I suppose. It's all about your experiences with it. I think I'll give you an example from about half an hour ago. I'm down in Limerick because I'm attending an event tomorrow, and I met a couple that had just bought an EV. I was going to plug in, they were going to plug in, and they were having issues around connecting to the app, getting the car to work, all of these other kind of things. And they had just bought an EV. And the key thing that they said to me was, Jesus, why did we do this? You know, petrol cars were an awful lot easier. That kind of thing. I think that the user interface is one of the things I think that we need an awful lot more attention on, as well as the grid. But as what ESB said today, it's very unlikely that everyone's going to charge at the same time.
Okay. So, I mean, what do we need to do in terms of the EV grid?
In terms of the grid itself, there is a rollout there, and I think that's moving along quite well. As an EV user, I see that it's working an awful lot better than it was even 6 months ago. I think that's working out quite well. I think one of the things that perhaps government, ESB and ZEVI should do is to look at the customer experience. To look at the customer experience when they get to one of these fast chargers. How many apps do they have to have? How many cards do they need to have? That one thing is really poor. Like, we talk about it on public transport all the time, but it's an easy fix, I think, with EVs. I think that would get rid of a barrier. And then equally, roll out the charging as quickly as possible. But there's so much pressure on in terms of increasing and improving the grid, not only for EV charging, for data centers, for everything else, that I suppose it's going as quickly as it can do under those constraints.
Excuse my ignorance in asking this question, and I'm probably going to come across as being a bit dense in asking, but I'm going to ask it anyway. When we talk about 1,600 public charges and they can only take up to 1,400 charging at the same time, is that the overall ESB network that can't handle that, or are they linked off a separate network?
So I would imagine it's the load. So it depends upon where in the country it is. Say one of these fast chargers is linked into a substation. So that would depend upon where it is. So it's not the whole network as a whole. There are patches within the network that can be quite poor.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Would you recommend somebody to buy an EV, an electric vehicle, if they couldn't charge it at their home?
If they don't have home charging, that's one of the big issues. That's where you get at a very low price point. And that's where I suppose that's the real key thing and the key benefit of having an electric car. But I suppose one of the other things, I suppose, and it kind of wasn't lost on me when I saw a couple of negative stories come out about EVs this morning, that, you know, the petrol and diesel benefits to those are being taken back, and now suddenly all of a sudden the EVs are being vilified over this kind of, you know, that story in The Independent. Like, while it is news, it's so unlikely ever to happen. It could be like, you know, everybody in Ireland can't go see, I don't know, Toy Story 5 because there isn't enough cinema seats, you know. It's that type of story. So I suppose I did feel that EVs were vilified a little bit today in the media, perhaps, and maybe I'm just drawing two lines together because of the change
I suppose the point is, though, like, if you compare us to, say, a Norway or a Sweden, we don't have anything like the same number of charging points across the country as those countries.
No, we don't. And nor do we have anything like the number of cars that they have in those countries either. And they're using, again, I suppose it's ironic, they're using fossil fuels and taxes from those to pay for these EVs. So I suppose, you know, which situation would be better for us to be in? I think the charging network is moving out as quickly as it can. It's the grid, I suppose, and the addition of renewables to the grid is one of the key issues that we need to focus upon. And then in the background of all of this, it's the amount of energy that data centres are taking up.
Here's an interesting text, Brian. We need more capacity on the grid. That means erecting big, beautiful pylons everywhere. Otherwise, our electric appliances and cars simply will not work. People need to get used to this reality. Underground cables are not an option. They're too expensive and dangerous. We had Pádraig Tobin on last week, the leader of Aintu. He is one of the people opposing the interconnector across from the north-south interconnector. And he's saying it should go underground. I know there was a government report said it would cost, I think it was up to over $1 billion to put it over entirely underground. Do you have a view on that? Do we need to stop the opposition to this kind of infrastructure?
Well, I think you could say that nearly about all infrastructure, be it Metro, be it Lewis, be it any of these things. But I suppose the fact of the matter is that there is spare capacity in Northern Ireland. We are a single grid, a single electricity market, but there is spare capacity there. Whether it goes overground or underground, you know, that's up for an environmental impact assessment to say which is better. But cost is going to be the thing that I suppose impacts upon everything we do as we try to decarbonize our economy. And the thing that we're trying to do now is we're trying to do it very quickly, and that can end up being costly if we make mistakes.
Okay. Brian Caulfield, Associate Professor at the School of Engineering at Trinity College Dublin. Thank you indeed for talking to The Hard Shoulder.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.